From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Sorry, it's been all.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daily City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Coming up, what it's like to live with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
I fidget. I'm fidgeting right now. Like, I wear rings. I play with my rings. So I'm constantly, like, moving, but that hasn't... I lost my train of thought completely.
We'll meet a young adult who recorded her experience transitioning to life on Ritalin.
Okay, it's 8:15. I'm running late again. I have to be out the door in 10 minutes. Where's my toothbrush?
And we'll revisit our conversations with teenagers who grew up with ADHD to find out how they're doing now.
It will never be harder than high school again, and your world becomes more and more of your own.
Listen up. This is Cross Currents. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder affects just over 8% of school-aged children in the U.S. If you have ADHD, you already know what that means. It makes you restless. It makes it hard to focus. It makes it hard to stay focused, hard to pay attention, and hard to control your behavior, even if you want to. In 2010, we brought you a whole show focused on ADHD and its effects. We spoke with four San Francisco teenagers living with ADHD about how they manage from day to day. Today, we're going to listen back to what they had to say and then hear how they're doing now. When we first spoke with them 3 years ago, these teens were part of a group called Safe Voices. It's a project of the Parents Education Network, which advocates for students with learning differences. At the time, they were mentoring other young people with ADHD and thinking a lot about their own ways of coping.
My name is Jaden Peterson Ray, and I'm 17 years old.
My name is Tim Blair, and I'm 19.
My name is Sam Van Cleve, and I'm 16.
I'm Ted Milkey, and I'm 16 years old.
Well, I was technically diagnosed for the first time this year, but we've known I've had it for a couple of years.
I think I was diagnosed in kindergarten.
Diagnosed, I think, around 6 years old.
I was diagnosed in third grade. According to my mother, she knew there was always something special about me. But in third grade, it was taking me 5 hours to finish my homework. And somebody established that there was something wrong with that picture. So they took me to go get tested, and what do you know? I have ADHD.
It was frustrating when anything was boring, which was, you know, a lot of school. You know, it was frustrating socially because, you know, I was incredibly impulsive. You know, missed... You know, every conceivable social cue. I mean, just I missed all of that, and it was, you know, really a mechanical process to relearn all of that. When everyone else had kind of learned it in kindergarten, first grade.
I thought it was just like a bunch of little quirky things that I did. Like, I couldn't remember my homework. I couldn't remember my backpack. I couldn't remember my computer. I know last year it became really prominent. I would take walks during classes. I'd like get up and go outside and walk around the school, come back, sit down, and be able to focus a little better. I think that was the most apparent thing that went on at school, at least. I mean, I fidget. I'm fidgeting right now. Like, I wear rings. I play with my rings, or I shake my foot and tap my foot or tap my fingers, drum on random things. So I'm constantly, like, moving, but that hasn't... I lost my train of thought completely.
My parents just wanted me to succeed in life. So they tried putting me in all these different schools. I've been through 6 schools altogether in my whole life, public and private. And so it's been tough.
I feel like I notice a lot of things that other people don't notice, and it grabs my attention. I'll look over there, and mid sentence, I'll forget what I'm saying.
You know, when it came to frog and toad in class, that was a no-go. Too boring. And I couldn't focus, or so it was really tough to learn to read on all the kiddie books because it was just boring.
I know it definitely caused a lot of trouble in school. I was never very interested in the process, and I think that that affected how I did in school.
School's not easy for kids with ADHD because you can't really sit still in class, especially when you have to listen to somebody teach. It gets kind of boring for me.
You just heard the voices of teenagers from Safe Voices, student mentors who work with peers living with ADHD and other learning differences. We'll hear more from them later in our show. But first, we'll meet somebody else with a personal perspective on ADHD, Shannon Heffernan. Throughout her life, Shannon's had trouble focusing. When she was 23, she realized she had to make a change. So for the first time, she decided to take Ritalin, a well-known pharmaceutical used to manage ADHD. She recorded her experience. Here's Shannon.
Okay, it's 8:15. I'm running late again. I have to be out the door in 10 minutes. Shoot, where's my toothbrush?
That's the sound of me getting ready in the morning.
I'm heading out the door.
Oh, shoot, I gotta go back. I gotta get my bus pass. I have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. It makes my life interesting.
I'm Kyle Schmidt, and I went to college with Shannon, and one time I was in class with Shannon, and she started flipping out because she couldn't find her book. So she starts going through her bag, and she finds this little can of condensed orange concentrate. And so she comes to class the next day, and she's found her book. We're like, hey, Shannon, where'd you find your book? And she's like, it was in my freezer where my orange juice is supposed to go.
I was diagnosed with ADHD in the third grade. My parents said they were always frustrated with how I would drift off into my own world. But they never put me on Ritalin. I asked my dad why.
We were concerned about the negative side effects of medicating and the fact that you were so highly intelligent. And so we didn't give you, you know, sometimes we would think, well, she's just being lazy, you know, too, when you were younger. We haven't learned who you were yet. You had your full personality hadn't come through.
My dad says he knew his decision to keep me off Ritalin was right when adults kept telling him that talking to his 10-year-old daughter was like talking to a grown-up. But now that I'm 23, I don't feel so grown up. When I graduated college, I started doing research for Chicago theater. My first week at work, I was supposed to drop off some notes. But I took a bus going the wrong direction and was 30 minutes late. When I finally arrived, I couldn't find the notes. I went home to print them out again, but I realized I had somehow deleted the file. I felt so embarrassed. So adolescent. I realized that if I kept on like this, I would never become the adult I wanted to be. So I've decided to try something new.
I am sitting here with my first dose of Ritalin, and I'm feeling a mix of things. I'm feeling excited that this may alleviate a bit of the chaos that I have dealt with my whole life. I'm feeling a little sad, like, maybe if this works, I'll be saying goodbye to something that's been a part of me my whole life, and I'm not really sure if I might lose something in addition to what I gain. Okay, here it goes.
My first few days on Ritalin, I couldn't tell if it was making a difference. I wanted it to work so much that every time something went right, I thought, there, that, maybe that's the Ritalin. I wondered, what is Ritalin doing in my brain right now? So I looked it up. Ritalin stimulates a neurotransmitter called dopamine. Scientists guess that dopamine somehow stimulates the attention centers of the brain, but they're not really sure. They don't know what causes ADHD, and they can't really tell why certain things fix it. It makes it difficult to know what's me and what's ADHD. What's the pills and what's just me hoping something's different?
It's my third day on Ritalin, and I just finished a project for work in half the time it used to take me. It may sound strange, but I've been feeling like I'm working faster because my brain slowed down. Usually, I haven't finished one idea before the next idea is already in my head. It's like an ocean trying to get through a garden hose. It just doesn't work. And I never realized till just now that I was operating in an abnormal way. It's like when you're in a room and the sun is setting and you don't realize that the room has gotten dark and someone comes in and turns on the light and you think, oh, wow, how was I reading in the dark? This is so much better.
But there was a problem. I couldn't remember to take the Ritalin. It was frustrating that I had to remember and keep track of pills in order to remember and keep track of things. It's like telling somebody with no arms they can have arms, but they have to pick them up off the ground first. My frustration reached a peak one Saturday morning when I forgot to take my pill.
Hello, you've reached Laura Gordon. Leave me a message and I will call you back. Hi, Laura, this is Shannon. You're not going to believe this, but I'm calling you from jail. I was in the grocery store and I dazed out or something and I left the store with my groceries and without paying, and they arrested me. And
after I made my phone call, I was strip searched and put in a cell. The policeman stood outside and answered my cell phone. When Laura tried to call me back, she got him.
And I try to ask him, you know, what did she shoplift? Because I'm still, like, completely confused about this whole idea. And he won't tell me anything. He just basically is saying, you know, she's going to have to pay the price. And
I was so mad because I was sitting there in the cell and he had gotten into my bag and gotten on my cell phone. It rang. And was just telling everybody who answered, she's in jail for shoplifting. She's in jail for shoplifting. And I'm thinking, all my friends are going to think what's happening.
Right. And I remember when you came back afterwards, you had like 2 days where you were like really worried that you actually were a shoplifter and thinking that everybody was going to think you were this terrible person now.
I kind of recall that when I called you, you laughed.
I went to court for the shoplifting case. The security guard didn't show up, and so the charges were dropped. Walking out of the courtroom, I wanted it to be a symbolic new beginning. Now I could start. Now I could become that person I wanted to be. But I've learned that it doesn't quite work that way. We all have things we want to change about ourselves. And sometimes we do change. But sometimes we find ourselves in the same patterns, no matter how hard we try or what pills we take. Ritalin wasn't a success or a failure, a beginning or an end. Because like so many things we think will change our lives, from moving to a new city to ending a relationship, I was still there in the end. I don't think this means we shouldn't try and get to better places in our lives. I just think it means we can't forge our passports to get there.
That was Shannon Heffernan chronicling her life with ADHD before, during, and after taking the drug Ritalin. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. 30 years ago, it was rare for a kid to be diagnosed with ADHD. Today, about 5 million children carry that diagnosis, and more than 2 million of them are taking the drugs used to treat its symptoms.
My oldest son is named Max. He is 14 years old. He has ADHD. I have an 11-year-old son whose name is Sam. He also has ADHD. I have a 9-year-old daughter named Mia. She also has ADHD. And I have an 8-year-old son named Judah who was just recently also diagnosed with ADHD. That mix is a very interesting genetic mix.
That's from a commercial for Concerta. That's one brand name of methylphenidate, the pharmaceutical most commonly prescribed for ADHD. Its most well-known trade name is Ritalin. It's a psychostimulant drug that's also used to manage obsessive-compulsive disorder, narcolepsy, and depression. It's the drug that helped Shannon Heffernan get her work done more quickly. But pediatrician Sandy Newmark thinks it's overprescribed.
I just think there are other things that can be done nutritionally and behaviorally that can really help these kids, often without the need for medication.
Dr. Newmark is the founder of the Center for Pediatric Integrative Medicine, and he's the author of ADHD Without Drugs, a guide to the natural care of children with ADHD. He treats children primarily through non-medical remedies like nutrition, herbal supplements, behavioral changes, and homeopathy. Integrative medicine like this isn't common in pediatrics, but it is gaining prominence. Newmark now heads the Pediatric Integrative Neurodevelopmental Program at UCSF. Like thousands of other physicians, Dr. Newmark was trained in and practiced conventional medicine for young people. But he says it was a 2-year fellowship he completed under the guidance of nutrition guru Andrew Weil that changed his perspective on pediatric health. In this piece from our archives, KALW's Hana Baba visits Dr. Newmark at his Belmont clinic to talk about his unconventional approach.
If you talk to old-time pediatricians, the only kids who got diagnosed with ADHD were those children who came into your office and tore the place apart before your very eyes. You know, we've seen those kids. Now we have kids with the inattention subtype who aren't hyperactive, who just have sort of concentration problems at school. So we've widened the definition a lot.
Who has widened the definition a lot? Like, who is behind the definitions?
Some of it is very sort of informal. It's people who write articles in journals. There's people who come up with sort of best practices. And, you know, it's kind of a set of specialists who get sort of well-known in the field and do research and write articles. That's who's widened the definition. And I have to say, without, you know, sort of accusing anybody, almost everybody who's writing these articles is getting big-time support from the pharmaceutical companies who make these drugs. Now, there was a study that showed that omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil, caused really significant improvement in learning in a number of children. If this study had been about a new drug with no side effects, which fish oil has, that would have caused huge headlines. Pharmaceutical reps would have been in every pediatrician's office within a week, showing them the study, waving it around. New research would have been funded, because one research study isn't enough. We need a number of research studies on any one thing. Well, you know what happened with this? Nothing. It just dropped off. Believe me, there were no pharmaceutical reps in anybody's office, because nobody's going to make any money off of fish oil because it's not patented. So that's what happens, that the pharmaceutical company's agenda determines what gets studied to a great degree because they fund the studies.
Is it just easier for pediatricians to diagnose with ADHD? Here you go. This is what's wrong with your child. Here's some Ritalin. They calm down. Is it the easy route? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. I think it's not just pediatricians. It's our whole society, isn't it? The pill is the easy route. We like to have a pill to fix things, and pediatricians are pressed for time. They often have many patients to see. Parents are pressed for time. A lot of parents, if you tell them, for instance, in my book, I say, you know, let's look at nutrition. Let's do things with diet. Well, maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they think, if we can just give them a pill every morning and that's it, that'll solve the problem. The way it's mostly diagnosed is the teacher or somebody else says to the mom, I think your child has a problem concentrating. You might want to get a medical opinion. And that's code speak for get your child on Ritalin. And then so the mom goes to the doctor, he talks for 10 or 15 minutes, maybe gives her some forms to fill out, and trial of Ritalin. That's a very common way it happens, and it's not good enough.
What's your approach to treating ADHD, and how do you do it through integrative medicine?
So the first thing about my approach is my initial interview is 90 minutes. And then we look first at nutrition. You know, you give a child a Pop-Tart, which is essentially sugar wrapped in sugar, at breakfast time, his blood sugar goes smoking up and then wham, drops down. And then he becomes irritable and fidgety. Well, is that ADHD or is that just poor nutrition? Another thing I do that I think is pretty conventional but isn't done conventionally is I measure levels of minerals like magnesium and iron and zinc, which have all been linked to ADHD and are often low in these kids. Sometimes there's even herbs that can be helpful for ADHD.
Like what?
The most interesting herb that I've found that works is called pycnogenol, and it's from the bark of a European pine tree. It's an antioxidant, basically. It's just full of antioxidants. And it can really help kids concentrate.
You parented a, quote, challenging child.
Well, it's really interesting. I have two children. One of them is mentally handicapped, and she was the easy one. That really drew me towards wanting to help take care of kids who have difficulties, who are just not as easy as the average kid. But then my son was really, really bright, and he didn't have ADHD, but he was challenging. So I learned a lot from that experience. But I can very easily sympathize with parents who have kids who are difficult, just difficult in some way.
How is your son doing today?
My son's doing fantastic. He ended up going to law school. He does public interest law in Oakland and helps people who are desperately in need of help, and he did just great. With the right approach, I think most of the children who are difficult or have ADHD can be helped tremendously without necessarily using medication.
Dr. Sandy Newmark heads the Pediatric Integrative Neurodevelopmental Program at UCSF, and he's the author of ADHD Without Drugs, a guide to the natural care of children with ADHD. He spoke with KALW's Hannah Baba. So what do you think? Are you parenting a child with ADHD? How do you feel about Dr. Newmark's approach? You can call us with your experience and opinions at 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to feature your story on the air. You're tuned in to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Now that we've heard about some treatment options, let's revisit our teenagers living with ADHD. They and their families have made their own choices about how to treat their disorders. So, what do they look forward to in the future, and how do they plan to treat themselves? Let's find out.
My prescription got filled today for Ritalin. I haven't taken it yet. But I've actually taken a short-acting Ritalin, and that's really helped for doing my homework. And so we have a long-acting one. I'm going to take it for the first time tomorrow. We'll see how that goes at school and everything. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Well, I just graduated high school a few months ago. Right now I'm taking a gap year. This is kind of, I think, a time for me to explore what I'm really passionate about. Right now I kind of see that in nonprofit work. Because I think all people, it's good to find something you're passionate about to become intrinsically motivated rather than, you know, carrot and whip, you know, paid or fired. But for me, being ADHD, it's necessary. That's the way I can focus. That's really the only way I've found to succeed. So this is a year for really me to explore my passions.
I don't feel that right now I'm in the place for me to handle in terms of handling my ADHD. I think that I'm gonna have to continue taking it day by day and try out different things, see which methods of focusing work, which methods of getting my work done are successful and which aren't, how to take tests and how not to take tests, and I just gotta keep taking it day by day.
When I first took Ritalin, short acting, it didn't really seem like it was helping. I was talking really fast. I was talking about this, and then talking about that. And it kind of seemed to heighten it. But the second time I took it, it took my energy, and instead of letting it go everywhere, it kind of put it in one place, kind of focused it a little bit.
I've also found that being off medication, a lot of my natural curiosity that I used to have as a little kid, a lot of that is coming back. The world's more interesting. I want to know more. I see some, that doesn't make sense. I got to make sense of it. And like I was talking about with my dad, is that's something I think I can count on to carry me through college, is to really want to figure out more, just counting on that curiosity.
You can express anything you want if you have a learning disability. I mean, there's people out there that think they have a learning disability, but they really don't. I mean, to us, the community that has a learning disability, we take it as a gift, not a setback.
As long as I keep taking it day by day and keep remembering that there's more after this, well, I think I can do all right.
You just heard from Jaden Peterson-Ray, Tim Blair, Sam Van Cleve, and Ted Mulkey, who worked with Safe Voices, a mentoring and advocacy group for young people with ADHD and other learning differences. Jaden, Tim, Sam, and Ted talked with us 3 years ago. We wanted to find out how things had gone since then, so we invited them to come into our studios. Sam and Tim were able to stop by. Sam is 18 now. She took a gap year after graduating from high school, and she'll be attending Oberlin College in Ohio this fall. Tim is 21. He also took a gap year after high school, and he's now enrolled in community college in Berkeley. They sat down with KALW's Ben Trefney, who asked them for their thoughts about hearing their voices when they were still in or just graduated from high school.
I don't entirely disagree with anything that I said back then, though I would like the chance to clarify some of what I said because it wasn't the most clear I've ever been.
Go ahead.
At the very end, I think I said something along the lines of, as long as I take it day by day, and know that there's more after this, it'll be fine. I wanted to clarify first that after this, I wasn't referring directly to my medication at that point. It was more day by day in terms of how I deal with my learning disabilities, how I deal with my medication, how I face the world around me, and then know that there's more to life after the educational system, after once I get out of education, because I personally, at least, have always been told that, you know, in the academic institution, that that might not be your time to shine, but you will get that chance afterwards. And I knew that then when I spoke as a sophomore in high school the little bit of experience that I had outside of school. But I know that even more so now, coming back from a gap year where I worked on a presidential campaign. And in that campaign office, the aspects, or as people call them, symptoms of my ADHD, the ones that made school the most challenging, were my biggest, biggest assets working in a campaign office. And it was incredible.
What were some of the things that you found to be assets for yourself?
So in class, I'm sitting in class, you know, the teacher's talking and you're supposed to be just focusing and just have all your focus on the teacher talking. But that's not enough to engage my brain fully. And so I get distracted by the birds outside or the kids I hear in the playground or what so-and-so is doing behind me. But in a campaign office, what that means is when I'm working at that front desk, there can be three different staff members that want six different things from me in the next half hour. Meanwhile, 17 different volunteers come in and they're all waiting to get trained, and I can be training them while dealing with the toner that's missing from the printer in the midst of also getting the things done from those staff members that want them done in the next half hour. And all that going on, as overwhelming as it sounds, is something that my brain can handle. It's something that, because of my ADHD and my ability to focus on so many different things all at once, I guess that would be described by multitasking, it became an asset.
So for you, you think that ADHD has helped you be able to multitask better in the world outside of academia?
Yeah, it helps me do a whole lot of different things all at once and get things done. And because that environment was more focused on kind of short-term output, like get this done, get this done, get this done, get this done, as opposed to, you know, write this research paper over a month. There was a whole
long-term project.
It was a complete different set of standards and set of expectations, where what had previously been a disadvantage became an advantage, became a benefit.
So, Tim, have you found the same thing after school? It's been a while now since you were in high school and you're in college now. But tell me about your experiences out in the, you know, what some people call the real world after after high school.
Well, my experience in the real world has been about a year of nonprofit work during my gap year with a mentoring organization with Parents Education Network here in the city, doing a lot of, you know, very, I would say, tasks I'm very much not qualified for, and was able to learn very, very quickly like that. And, you know, having that flexibility, Sam described with ADHD, and whether, you know, it's in that, you know, office setting, or whether it's in as a cook in a restaurant, or working in a national park with a 15-person line on the resort.
These are all things you've done.
These are all things that I've been doing the past few years. Or just in, you know, college when the ratio changes. It's not three-quarters of your time in the classroom, then a quarter doing homework. You flip that. You spend a quarter of your time in the classroom and three-quarters doing homework. And it's really becomes a lot more about you and not about your setting.
Where you're able to control your scheduling,
and adapt as accordingly. I think of attention as water. In a high school classroom, it's like an aqueduct, and that water is moving forward at a steady pace. You've got a steady amount of stimulation, and you just got to deal with it. But, you know, if I'm bored, my water wants to go elsewhere. But if I'm interested, it's like a fire hose, and that's hyper-focus. We talk about that a lot in with ADHD and, you know, medical model or any model you describe. When we're interested, you got to wave your hand in front of our faces to make us snap out of it. And, you know, in the campaign office, Sam is sending her attention all over the place. She's fully stimulated, and it's going everywhere, and it's a really, really great gift when we find our element.
That's Tim Blair, and we're speaking with him and Sam Van Cleve, who are both young adults who have ADHD. So do you think that says, Tim, that the way that your schools, as you were growing up, weren't really designed to accommodate your ADHD? Sam, go ahead.
I just wanted to add in, before I mention that, is that in that in addition to, you know, the focusing and the being able to spread my attention in the campaign office, that's only one of several examples I could give, in that I want to emphasize ADHD, learning disabilities, whatever aspects of those or symptoms of those that appears a disadvantage in the classroom. Once a child gets out of that classroom and changes the environment, as Tim was talking about, it's a completely different ballgame.
Right.
Completely different ballgame. And so I do believe that in the educational system, that environment is structured to a specific type of learner. And it's very difficult, very challenging, for some even impossible, to succeed in that environment when it's not at all structured to the way that you work, your brain works, the way that you learn, and it's very difficult to succeed. But it requires also a certain amount of flexibility and a certain amount of support that some kids get and some kids don't get.
Well, did you two get that when you were in, say, high school, middle school? Did you get learning assistance from, you know, special needs teachers or programs?
Yeah, I mean, we're required to get that by the state. And I felt like, you know, I was pretty lucky with a lot of the schools I went to. Gateway High School right here in the city was really, really spectacular about that. And it really dispels a lot of the myths that the public schools can't do it, because they did it very, very well. But the trouble with that is that it's, you're adapting a system that's already broken for us. So you're just chipping off parts of the square to try and get it into the round hole rather than not getting it there in the first place. And we can do better than that. And I think none of us are really truly the right size peg. And we all benefit from personalization.
How about that was a good analogy. I like that analogy.
You're not as into the water one?
No, it didn't really work for me.
Okay, well, that's all right. So I think the analogies can, you know, work for some and not for others, right? It's personalized.
Yeah.
So for you, then, did you find that as you were growing up and going through an education system that it worked for you, or they made accommodations that helped you, or have you found that that was just something that was extraordinarily frustrating?
Yes and no. I had parents that really fought for me when I was younger and fought to get me what I needed. And in that sense, I really did get the support that I needed from them. Though I have found, and this is completely my own decisions, you know, to stay in certain environments that are very much round pegs, when I'm square pegs, square holes,
whatever
round
peg you aren't.
Yeah, the hole of the shape of the peg. I have very much, it's based on my own decisions and my own choices, been in environments that are ill-suited to the way that I learn. And in those environments, it has been a struggle because they have very rigid curriculum structures, or they have certain goals in mind that can't always be altered to the way that I learn, in spite of or in addition to whatever accommodations they can give me. It's really not enough. That's one of the reasons I did transfer my senior year, just to see a different kind of environment, yet another one, to see if it could be more suited to the way that I learned. And I found that it was. And that was actually really encouraging heading into my gap year, so that I didn't end my high school career on a bad note. Or
where did you
frustrated.
End up going to high school? Where did you graduate from?
Bentley High School in Lafayette, California.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of school? Is that a different school for
it's not
more personalized?
It's not particularly different. It's just the structure of the curriculum was not as rigid as I felt the previous structure was, and it was, the teachers were of a different breed. They were just a different kind of, the school attracted a different kind of teacher that I meshed with better, and it worked a lot better for me.
Was that a public school or a private school?
No, it was a private school. Mm-hmm. Actually, I got there because one of the faculty advisors of Safe Voices is the head of school there, and he said, hey, come check it out. Mm-hmm. And so I did. But that was a really positive note heading in there, heading off into my gap year from Bentley.
If you could talk back to yourself 2.5 years ago, what would you say to that person who was just coming out of high school or just about to finish up high school, Tim?
It will never be harder than high school again, and your world becomes more and more of your own with every year you get older and with every step you take further along your own, you know, path to success or whatever, however you may define that.
How about you, Sam?
You will survive. You will make it through. And you will get to somewhere better.
That was Sam Van Cleve and Tim Blair speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Sam and Tim were originally interviewed 3 years ago about their experiences growing up with ADHD. You can find the interview you just heard, this whole show, and all of our content online at KALW.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Tiffany Kamhai, Jen Chien, Leela Day, Ben DeLuca, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Teddy Lederer, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Nina Gensler-Debs, Brooke Welty, Angela Johnston, Ben Vu, Marco Choi, Christian Rose, and Megan Quintana. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also thanks to you, KALW is independent, listener-supported public radio. The song you're hearing, it's by Wild Moth. The Bay Bridged website describes their sound as mixing the melodic gloom of post-punk with the intensity of traditional punk. But we're sure you can still bob your head frantically while listening to it. Wild Moth will be at the Bottom of the Hill Club in their hometown of San Francisco this Thursday. It's an all-ages show starting at 9 p.m. All of that information along with more local bands is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.